Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If we tell us what you think of kickers.
Look, my whole thing is, and this week one was tough for kickers. It's real tough, especially for you guys, kicker. And for me, it's when we have training camp and we train all off season, and we do training camp, we do preseason games, our training camp is different than their training camp. Their training camp is like summer camp. Ours is like work. So not only are they done earlier than everybody else, because special teams meetings are first, and once they're done, they're gone. We're there for an hour and a half, two more hours. Special teams practice, or their period, is quick, and then they're over there on the other field playing hacky sack or trying to kick the ball, or I don't know. It just looks like a whole bunch of fooling around. So when you finally get to the season and you're out there and it's the fourth quarter and you've played 62 plays and I'm blocking, you know, Micah Parsons or whoever, and put us in a situation to win the game, and then you come out, you skip out there, and then you kick the ball into the concession stand. Like, I'm like, bro, what have we been doing all summer? Like, what? Just like we've prepared. Like, I couldn't go out there and give up a sack on the first five pass plays. I couldn't do it. They would be like, oh, what's going on here? Like, I would be unprepared. I'd be criticized. When a kicker messes up, he's just over there in the corner by himself. No one's saying anything to him. And that's why I really liked what Debo did last year. Like, yo, bro, like, what are you doing? Like, we're working hard. It's hard. It's really hard. You have one job that this is all you do. You don't have to worry about any other meetings. You don't have to care. You don't have to block. You don't have to do anything. Just do this one thing. And when you don't do it, guys really don't have the appetite for that. I don't have the patience for it at all.
Do you view, when you are one of the big dudes in the middle especially, do you view kickers as full teammates?
Only if they win you games.
Yeah.
That's it.
There,
like,
it is.
I had the pleasure of playing with, in my opinion, the greatest kicker ever, and that's Morton Anderson.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. It's Morton Anderson. He played until he was like 70 years old. but like, when I got to Atlanta as a rookie, Morton was already old, and he played like 20 more years. So, the kickers who are revered and have time and time again have come up huge. Those that Elam, when I was in Denver,
yep.
Right? These are phenomenal kickers that you knew no matter what, all you had to do is get to this certain point and they were going to make it 99% of the time. Those guys are part of the team. The other guys, nah, bro, we don't need none of that. We're not trying to do none of that.
And it really is an earned thing, because I was just looking at your rookie year. Morton Anderson, overtime game winner, sends you to the Super Bowl. And then in the Super Bowl,
period,
he missed a kick, and I don't think that it decided the game. Whatnot,
it really did matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I'll tell you this, in that same game, that NFC Championship game, Gary Anderson, who was the kicker of the millennium, hadn't missed a kick in 2 years or whatever, he missed, which gave us an opportunity to win that game. And so don't you think the Minnesota Vikings felt a certain type of way about him?
I mean,
yeah, they didn't lose that almost that entire year until then. 38 yarder.
Until then.
Yep. No good. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy. I still remember that one too. Ephraim Salam is joining us here on Willard and Dibbs 95.7 The Game. E, you know what else I wanted to ask you, because we get a lot of this around here, which is, Oh, Christian McCaffrey's touches is too much. Kyle is irresponsible. He's running him into the ground. I want to know this, because I always hear people go, why don't you feed Pearsall? Why don't you feed this guy? When you go out there for a play, I mean, obviously if you're handing the ball off to Christian, that's one thing. But when you go out there and there's a pass play, because I think he had 9 catches this week, to what level, people make it sound like Kyle's got a video game machine in his hand. Like, to what level do you know who's probably going to get the ball?
When you have a player that can always get himself open, no matter what the coverage is, Kelce is like that. Kittle has a lot of that in him as well. Debo was like that. Like, when you have a specialty player that can always get himself open, Marshall Faulk made a whole living of doing that. So did Roger Craig, right? Like, these are the dynamic backs that took their game to the next level. It was not just a handoff and let them try to get through the line of scrimmage. It's a mismatch. Like, anytime you have Christian McCaffrey on anybody other than a corner or like a legitimate safety, then you want to get him the ball. That's the whole design of an offense. When I was in college, I learned this. We would motion Marshall Faulk out of the backfield. If a linebacker went, the ball was going there no matter what. No matter who else was open, no matter what else was happening, if we motioned Marshall and there was a linebacker that went out with him, that's where the ball was going. And I see a lot of similarities in this Shanahan offense where they'll put him in a position and you look and you say, oh, he has a choice route against a linebacker. Of course the ball's going to go there.
And is that ultimately Shanahan's separation skill, his ability to scheme in this fashion, no matter who he has on the field, to get guys to be successful, no matter who you're going against?
He's going to a great offensive mind, and I consider Kyle a great offensive mind. Their whole job is to put you in a position to where you can exploit the defense. Your best guy against whoever they have in an advantageous situation, and that's what he does. That's what a great offensive mind does. That's what Ben Johnson did for 3 years in Detroit. That's why Detroit looked like that. Now, can that carry over to Chicago? We don't know yet. He had a lot of frustration on his face in that third quarter last night dealing with Caleb Williams, but that's why they pay you the big bucks. Like, when you design your offense and you have your personnel in front of you, you're trying to create a mismatch. And anytime you have a talent like Christian McCaffrey, then you're coming into the play with a mismatch.
Ephraim and I were doing our show Sunday night during the Bills-Ravens game.
Oh, my God.
Our show ended at 8 o'clock, which means that when the show ended, I think the Bills were down by 15 points. Dude, could you believe it? Could you believe that?
I said to you on air, this Ravens team is the best team I've ever seen. Like, when you took a team with a Josh Allen on it and you made it look like they didn't belong, I said, it felt like what we were watching for three and a half quarters of that game, that no one was going to be able to beat Baltimore. And then freaking Josh Allen happened. I'm like, this may be the greatest quarterback. And look, I know people love Patrick Mahomes. I love Lamar. I love, Patrick. But Josh Allen, this is becoming something else. This is something else. This reminds me of Peyton Manning. He was never out of the game. I've lost to Peyton Manning with 2 minutes left in the game. We're up by 13. We've lost that game. Like, when things like that happen, Patrick Mahomes has a whole bunch of this, right? Like, 2 seconds and 9 seconds. It doesn't matter how many seconds you leave, he can get points. But watching Josh Allen and the way he does it with his feet, with his arms, the type of passes he's making. Remember, this is a young man who only completed about 50% of his, 56% of his passes just 6 years ago as a rookie.
In college.
And now, yeah. I mean, his rookie year, he was all over the damn place.
Yep. Yep.
And Brian Daboll kind of got him under control, and he went from like low 50s to 70s, which was a huge jump that had never happened before, and now that's just who he is.
My friend, thanks for coming on. That was a whole lot of fun. So Kyle Shanahan is not getting people hurt. And kickers are only your teammates if they make all their kicks.
Do their job. If they do their job.
Okay.
Like, if a quarterback is not doing his job, you don't really want to associate with him. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, and if your kicker is 39 and he's about to play 7 more years, then, yeah, he's probably done some things in the league.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
Do you think Jake Moody's going to get another job?
No.
Oh.
Man.
I think it's too many kickers out there waiting, especially with the USFL and all of that. Like, there are guys who played in the XFL and the USFL who are getting opportunities now. There are too many young kickers out there waiting for an opportunity for you to just go recycle. I mean, it's been 2 years of piss poor kicking. For lack of a better term.
We got you. We're good.
So, keep it a buck.
We're good. Yeah. We're good. I talked to you Sunday for week 2, buddy.
Oh, can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks,
Ephraim. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ephraim.
And just so you know, I'm nobody's side piece, okay? I'm the main course, all right? That's
I only see you once a week.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's the best time of your life, damn it.
Ephraim, I'm going to give you Sunday. As long as you send him back to me on Monday, we can go ahead and have this arrangement.
He will come back.
Make sure you send him on home now, Ephraim. That's all I'm asking.
I will.
I got here Monday. He's like, where were you?
Totally.
I was like, where was I? I was talking to Ephraim.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
Yeah.
All right, you guys have a good one.
Yeah, you too. All
right.
Yeah.
Ephraim Salam.
All right. Yeah. Ephraim Salam.
Where were you?
Totally.
Where was I? Were you talking to that Fox guy again?
Well, you're supposed to be on our air 5 to 8. I tuned in and you weren't there, so I started calling around to the local haunts to see where you were, Mark, because you weren't where you were supposed to be.
Well, I will be this weekend.
You're right, you will be.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless that overtime goes double overtime.
10 o'clock Niner game.
Yep.
All right, that was fun, and John Feliciano is coming up at 5. Until then, can we run this by y'all? We've now just had back-to-back voices, pretty tapped in different ways, who tell you, yes, the Niner injury thing is just dumb luck. That's it. Do you buy it? What do you think it is, y'all, that makes the 49ers just pile up the injuries every year? We'll take your calls on that right now. 888-957-9570 is the number. Coming up at 7 tonight, Valkyries and Seattle Storm. You can hear the game on 95.7 The Game, also the Valkyries channel on the Odyssey app. You can also watch the game on KPIX Plus. Pre-game starts at 6:30. Why do you think the Niners get so damn hurt? 888-957-9570. It's Willard and Dick.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
What do you think is going to happen in this game, Sting?
That's a great, I think it's going to be a really tight game.
On 95.7 The Game.
All right, I got something for you.
Yep.
We got a lot of things for you.
A lot of things.
We got a lot of things. We're going to go to the phones here in a sec. People want to weigh in. We really want to hear from you on this. What do you think it is? Like, I'm open-minded to whatever now. This is absurd. Here we go again. The Niners are the most injured team in football. I know it's been 1 week, but here we go again. What do you think it is? Tomorrow at 7 o'clock, Odyssey presents I'm Listening, a special broadcast event featuring some of the biggest names in music, news, sports, and some of the most respected mental health professionals. I'm Listening will be hosted by Carson Daly and spreads awareness about mental health and the message that talk saves lives. You are not alone. It's okay to be not okay. You can listen right here on 95.7 The Game at 7 p.m. tomorrow. For more information, visit imlistening.org. And that's an interesting phrase right now, because that's sort of where I went today with regard to this idea of the 49ers and injuries. I'm listening.
Yep.
Because for 6 years, I've just poo-pooed it. I'm like, y'all are just mad. And I get it. We're all frustrated. Why is only our team seemingly getting hurt? There were times where I thought it was just a perception. I'm like, everybody's getting hurt. You just only know about our injuries because we're 49er fans.
Yeah.
Or there's emotion involved in it. Or it's a crazy physical game. And, you know, gosh, dumb luck. And by the way, there are years where they aren't the most injured.
There's one of them.
And they went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
So, like,
Warren Sharp had the numbers, and if you go back to 2018, in terms of rank by most injured, 4th, 6th, 1st, 3rd, 9th, 29th Super Bowl. Last year they were number one, and this year it seems like they're probably number one already.
Well, I mean, off to a bad start, yes.
Right. Although, but those are the numbers from Warren Sharp, yeah. And he crunches all the data on all this stuff, and so that is... Six years of the past seven where you're top 10.
I will say we're out of the gate with, and I get the, because it's big names, it's possible that only one Niner is hurt right now. Brock Purdy and Juwan Jennings might play.
You're right.
It's possible that only, you know what I mean? So I know that we got to work yesterday and people, you know, kind of, all right, let's get back to life. And all of a sudden it's like, George, Brock, Juwan, pa, pa, pa. It's like, oh my God. Are you kidding me? But Brock might play. Juwan might play. George Kittle is on IR, and that is very unfortunate. But he was running around, and his hamstring tightened up, and this is something that happens in sports. So,
and Ben Bartsch is on the report, right. But he played every single snap. So
right, and they gave him a day-to-day designation as well. So, like, whatever those are, it doesn't seem to be too serious. Obviously, the lead story tomorrow will be Brock Purdy, as they start the practice week, and we'll get to learn a little bit more about the seriousness of that, because that was the first thing Kyle said yesterday, is we got to see how that progresses tomorrow. Today's their off day. Tomorrow, we'll learn a little bit more about Brock Purdy. But it's possible only one 49er got hurt, so let's not let this get too crazy yet. But it's a very, I'm listening. Like, what is it? Now, I momentarily feel buoyed, Dibs.
Yeah, by your guy Ephraim Salam.
And Cam Inman. They both blew it off. They did the same answer that I've been given for 6 years. But what if we're wrong? Because you're right. Warren Sharp's tweet, it slaps you in the face when you read it.
Right in the
face.
It's
like, my God, what are we doing? This cannot be a coincidence. But maybe it is.
Well,
I don't know.
Then what is it? And this is where... You know, I look at the whole question in and of itself, and it's got to be something. It doesn't have to be just one thing. It can be six or seven different things. You can be in failing health, and it doesn't have to just be one issue. You might have five different things inside your body that are all going wrong, and all five of those things might be leading to you being in really bad shape. So all of these things that we've mentioned, that we've named, they can all be a part of it, whether it's Kyle Shanahan trying to get him to callus up in practice, or they play more physically, the training staff doesn't properly prepare the guys, it's just bad luck, they're an older team. It can be all those things and none of them. We don't know.
I will say that I think it's a pretty, you know, again, there's a lot of different answers people throw out there. It's pretty firm to me that when an offensive lineman... Kyle Shanahan was his OC in Houston. Mike Shanahan was his head coach in Denver. And he flatly said, it's not the system. A zone read, run game, that has nothing to do with it whatsoever. And that's from a left tackle who played multiple years under people named Shanahan. That carries a lot of weight with me. No pun intended.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, that is different than this and the way they prepared back then. As he said, you know, used to be day one was pad up.
That's true.
Pad up, guys. And so I don't know if players are more injured now because of the way we treat preseason. I'd have to do a deeper dive, and maybe this is one for Warren Sharp, comparing injury rates to preseason approaches, because you've got some teams that don't play anybody ever in the preseason. You have other teams like Cincinnati, you were mentioning, they played a lot of their guys in game one. Yeah, like, well, get out there. And
they, because they've had such slow starts.
Right. And so they, I wonder, like, if there's a correlation between your approach and what happened subsequently, because I don't think George Kittle played more than a handful of snaps.
Like three plays or something like that. You know what I mean? But I don't know. Maybe Barrows was kind of talking, and we're referring to Matt Barrows did suggest in a recent article that the Niners go a little harder in practice and in camp than other teams because Kyle believes that that kind of helps them build up a callus, helps them be a little tougher. And then here's the other thing. Even if your response to that is, well, then Kyle, take your foot off the gas. Chill out. Kyle may come back at you and say, did you notice I might lose a lot to injury, but I don't lose a lot of games. So, like, maybe I'm still right. Even with the injuries, I'm having more game success than most coaches around the league.
At times, yeah. He's had four good years and he's had four bad years.
I know,
so.
But let's blow that off. Let's be real. The first 2 years don't count. He was in the roster reconstruction mode.
In two of the other years, those years got derailed because of injury.
Right, and maybe he feels that's a risk worth taking because if you're able to navigate it, you're a really good football team.
Yep.
I don't know how he'd answer it.
I stand behind his approach. I'm a Shanna fan, as you are, and I look at his success, and yeah, the team he took over that first year when they started out 0-9 or 0-10, that was the worst roster in football, and it took time to build it up. They built it up, and the quarterback got hurt again. So those are all things that are out of your control. I don't think that Jimmy Garoppolo's torn ACL was because of the strength and conditioning guy.
No.
He should have gone out of bounds. He tried to plant and cut, and the leg gave out. So that's football.
Yeah.
That happens.
A bunch of people tore their ACL on the field in New Jersey, and a bunch of people always tear their ACL on the field in New Jersey. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, there's if you throw all the reasons that we hear at me or at you or whatever, I do still feel there are some that I don't. Like, brick wall. I don't want to hear that.
Sure, but
I don't want to hear that it was the strength and conditioning coach.
Right.
As you mentioned,
they're on to their second or their third group of them already.
And I don't want to hear that it's the system Kyle runs. Now, if you do want to talk about the physicality of the way you run your camp and the way you run your practices, I don't know. I got to be open-minded to that. Is it the age of the players? I have a hard time with that because there are a lot of veterans now, but there weren't before. Like, I don't feel like 4 years ago we looked at the Niners and went, ooh, old team. I've never felt – I get it now. You're starting to get the Kittles and the Trents and the Freds and, you know, like they've been around the block for a while. I understand that. But I don't know, man. Not all of these reasons are built the same, and I'm still having a hard time with most of them having them feel rational. Like, it's just – but also at the same time, I can look at the numbers and be like, that doesn't make sense either.
And I don't think that you can just chalk it up to, quote, bad luck when you've had that many seasons where you are that injured. That feels to me like more than just happenstance or bad luck.
It seems like it.
To me, you have to look at every injury in a different light, and that's where I look at the George Kittle one where he was just out there running in space and he pulled the hammy, and he pulled it to where he's going to be out for four games, which tells me it was more than a grade one or maybe a severe grade one, and that was a non-contact, non-impact injury. Those are the ones that make my eyebrows get raised.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so Boxer and Gerson, work injury attorneys text line. Try this one on for size, 707. I think we have a lot of injuries, especially because we go for so much yak. Now, this is an interesting one. Now, okay, yak. There's only so many players who are actually trying to yak out there, right? Yak in.
Yep.
Anyway.
Thank you.
Anyway, right? I understand that means downfield blocking. You're asking for receivers to be very, very physical downfield. Not all teams do that. You also have, you're looking for a style of receiver who is very physical and does push for more yards. Then again, I don't know too many wide receivers or running backs who, when they're out on the field and they feel like they could get more yards, they're like, never mind, I don't need them. However, I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown was accused of this at one point in his career. And back in the days when I was covering USC, one of their staff members was a former wide receiver, and he pulled me aside one day, and he goes, do you want, he started singing the praises. This is back in the Greatest Show on Turf days. He started singing the praises of Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt. And he goes, do you want to know, watch what those guys do when they get the ball in the open field. As soon as they feel like they're about to be tackled, they dive at the defender's legs. Sounds dirty. But he goes, no, not in such a way where you're contacting and hurting them. But when you dive at the lower half of another person's body, it completely takes away their ability to hit you hard. They just sort of have to kind of work with you and get out of the way and try to get you down and go out of bounds. So there is an art to staying healthy that to some degree, I guess, is on the players and the way they go about being tackled or allowing themselves to be tackled.
That's true. And I also think that that does go to the mentality of Shanahan and Robert Saleh, where, you know, Saleh's known for all gas, no brakes, and he wants his defense to play with a certain amount of physicality. And that's what you saw in week one, including after the whistle, D'Amador Lenore, the first of his two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, which was completely unnecessary, where he straight pushed JSN way after the whistle and just threw him over the pile. That was 15 yards that you probably didn't want to give up, but we'll nitpick that a little bit later. The other one is McCaffrey. He's always looking to get the extra yard, and that's the yak portion of it. And, you know, Brock Purdy, I'm looking at the play right now where he hurt his shoulder. He rolls back and back and back, and he's trying to make a play, and he takes a hit, and as opposed to throwing it away early and avoiding the hit. So these things are not Shanahan's fault. They're nobody's fault, but it is an approach where they approach the game with a physicality in all ways that can lead to more injury.
Let's go to the phones. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think it is? 888-957-9570. Larry in Berkeley on Willard and Dibbs. Hi, Larry. Thanks for the call.
Hey, thank you. Listen, that interview with Eason was incredible.
Oh, thanks,
and
Larry.
And I would go with him. I mean, the guy's played how many years in the league? And
13. 14? 13, I mean, yep.
So I go that way. But the thing, I was a little bit disappointed, and I thought I listened to the whole interview. Did I miss something, maybe? I was surprised you didn't talk to him about the block kick and the linemen and the people that were responsible for the kick being blocked.
Well, I'll tell you why. I was a little more interested in his kicker reaction, because that was a much bigger story throughout the NFL weekend. I can also tell you, not all offensive lines are built the same. Like Ephraim Salaam, I'm sure he'd be an expert on it because he was a longtime football player, but he was not a special teamer. That's a different offensive line than the offensive line that you see in regular possessions. You know what I mean?
I just would have been fun to hear, you know, his perspective on not, I mean, he gave his perspective on kickers, but, you know, what happens when, it's just, you know, it's like if that kick wasn't blocked and he made it, where would we be still having the same conversation?
I believe we would. I could be wrong. Larry, thanks. I really do. And I know you said earlier today you thought that was the last straw. For me, I think it was the 27-yarder. I just think that he was already, I know the Niners did a wonderful job of publicly supporting him. I think he was totally on his last legs. And when he goes out there for literally his first field goal kick of the year, and he walks out there and doinks it off of the thing from 27 yards away, to me, straw, camel's back, night-night.
Yeah, I think that you're probably right, and you can look at that other drive that ended with the blocked field goal, and I mentioned this to Cam Inman earlier about him going for it on fourth down. It was fourth and two at the 30. That's a 47-yarder, which is a very makeable kick in this day and age. Yep. And so, yeah, instead of going out and kicking the field goal, you didn't have George Kittle. You threw it to Luke Farrell. His first catch as a Niner. And credit Brock Purdy on that throw. And if you remember the play, his primary's taken, his secondary's taken, and he goes all the way back across the field and finds Luke and puts it in there, pow, 4 yards, move the chains. But normally in that spot, that's a classic Shanahan take the three. Even though we all would, you know, rip him later for being so conservative, well, he wasn't conservative, nope. And I think it's because of the kicker.
I've told you, I've arrived at the opinion that that's why Brock threw up a prayer ball when they were only down by 3 points on third down from inside the five. I know it sounds silly because it's a complete chip shot, but I don't know. Have you ever seen Jake Moody miss a chip shot?
No, not recently.
Not recently. So I think Brock Purdy's like, we got to score. We got to score right now. And if it gets knocked away or picked off, then it gets knocked away or picked off. But this is our only chance to win this game. Touchdown on this play. And that's why he threw the ball that he threw. And he's lucky, a little lucky. I know you don't like that word, fortunate,
sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It worked out. It worked out.
Yeah.
And you get credit when it works out.
You do. It reminded me a little bit of a three-point shooter who banks it in. And
yeah.
Not Steph Curry, but just another three-point shooter. Well,
Paul Pierce did that once.
Yeah, and
then remember
you throw
he's
the
like,
palms up.
They're like, did you call bank? And he's like, I call game.
Exactly.
Do you remember that?
I do.
It was late in his career. I'm like, oh, God. That's
and that's kind of what that was where, yeah, you threw it up and it went off glass and in. It's like 3 points.
You should only get 1 point for that.
Maybe. No. But, yeah. You know, and Brock and Tonjes get the six. And,
yes, they do.
And he made the play. That play could have been made either way. That ball was up there long enough to where the defender, the offensive player, it's like three flies up we used to play as kids.
Speaking of your boy Warren Sharp, I saw he spends all day tweeting out these lists, and they're based on advanced analytics or, as you said, the injury markers and things like that. How about this? Completion percentage over expected. So each throw
I saw this.
Has an expected outcome. It's kind of like when the ball gets hit out toward Triple's Alley, and it's like, ooh, that had an expected batting average of 789, but not in San Francisco.
Right.
Just landed in someone's glove, right? The completion percentage over expected. And then there's a list of every quarterback this weekend and where they landed. Obviously, the higher percentage, that means the better you played, in theory. Number one, Jalen Hurts, 15.2%. Number two, Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy, 12.7% over expected completion percentage.
That's right. And so, you know, that means a lot of the throws that he was able to complete, they were able to complete, were more unexpected than normal. And a lot of that is because of the pressure rate.
Yeah, degree of difficulty.
Right. And he made a couple of just beautiful throws to Pearsall, the double move one and the other one where he just throws it all the way across the field to the outside boundary and puts it right on Pearsall. He made some big-time throws in that game.
Anybody want to know who's down at the bottom of the list? Anybody want to take a little gander? You saw the list already, did you?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
I actually retweeted the list.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Oh, you're active today.
Well, I saw it this morning.
Okay.
And the three-year-old is back in school, so the 9 a.m. drop-off bodes well for bonus prep for your guy.
Tied for the lowest percentage on the board, Bryce Young of the Carolina Panthers and Caleb Williams last night.
Right.
Who looked like he was targeting fans in the stands at times.
In the fourth quarter, yeah. And the Bryce Young one, Warren Sharp also had another tweet about a stat that highlighted that he had maybe one of the worst games ever in terms of not being pressured.
He was brutal.
But he wasn't pressured.
No, but I mean, Bryce Young at the end of last year kind of got some people finally on his side. They're like, ooh, we got a little something from Bryce. And then he went out in week one. He just looked awful. And then barely above those two, Russell Wilson. That won't surprise anyone. He was terrible. 10.5% on the negative. Cam Ward, give him a break, is his first game ever. And Calvin Ridley's out there dropping balls. So there's that too. And then at negative 7.9%, fifth lowest of the week, ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's just 1 week, small sample, but I think Kansas City's got they got some unique challenges this year with already an injury to their wide receiver, and the tight end is, you know, spring chicken either, and they don't really run the ball.
And
so
a suspension to his other wide receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Hollywood Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster, you're up. Let's go. But yeah, and Joe Burrow was in the negative as well. Kyler Murray was in the negative. Baker Mayfield was in the negative. Jaden Daniels was in the negative. Mark Grandy's favorite player on earth, Bo Nix, was in the negative.
Mm.
But Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers and Sam Darnold, by the way, and Jordan Love and Daniel Jones, obviously, Justin Fields, Jared Goff, Geno Smith had a great game. Those guys were all kind of up into the positive. All right, we can keep rolling on this. 888-957-9570 is the number. Why do you think that the 49ers seemingly always deal with more injuries than other teams? Speak from the heart. Let it rip on this one. What do you think it is? The more I'm trying to listen to everybody, we had Cam Inman come on. He says it's nothing. We had Ephraim on. Ah, football. People get hurt. He says it's nothing. He played in the system. He played under Kyle. He played under Mike Shanahan. Those are the answers that I want to believe. I want to believe that this is just dumb luck and not some fly in the ointment and to where like the whole thing that they've built is putting guys in a bad position. I have a hard time believing that, but my gosh, here we are again with one of their best players on IR as of this morning.
And all he was doing is running.
Yeah.
And I just rewatched that play. Brock Purdy gets sacked, and he's just running a route and doesn't even finish the route, and then the leg comes up a little gimpy, and now we won't see him till October.
Yeah. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. We will take your calls right now. Why do you think the 49ers get injured more than other teams? Also, in 18 minutes, John Feliciano makes his second appearance on Willard and Dibbs. It will again be on YouTube. John, of course, was on the Niners offensive line the last couple years. The last time we went out to – what state was he in? Was he in Kentucky or Louisiana or – he's somewhere out there in Middle America. And the last time we went out there, he kept it real. And if you were on YouTube, you got some fun words. You got some fun words. So maybe there will be more fun words. I don't know. But that's coming up at 5. Grandy's grades at 520.
I love it.
So we got a lot to do still.
The over-under has been set at 1.5 for Feliciano in cuss words.
Oh, boy. Last time, was it 2 or 3 last time?
It was 2.5, and you paid the over. But now I think he's a little bit more aware of what's going on with radio.
Maybe.
So find out.
Maybe. Mess around and find out.
I was thinking the same thing. Ephraim would never finish that sentence like I do. I'm getting jealous now. I'm in my feels. Ephraim.
It's only Tuesday. I'm not going to see my guy for another 5 days. It's Willard and Dibbs.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Just so you know, I'm nobody's side piece, okay? I'm the main course. Nah, bro. We don't need none of that. We're not trying to do none of that.
Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
I'm going to let y'all duke it out.
I'm good. I'm down to share.
I know.
I get the 5. He gets the 1.
You got 5 on it?
I get 4-hour shows. He gets a quaint little 3.
He does get a 3.
Nah, bro. We don't need none of that. Oh, yeah. We're not trying to do none of that.
And there's an update guy who just... talk about chomp, chomp, chomp.
That's our guy. Yeah, Steve comes in and he eats.
Steve's going to eat.
He's going to eat.
Steve's going to eat.
Steve's been doing that for years. He's excellent. He's excellent. Steve is welcome to come in and say whatever he wants.
I'd argue it's the best part of the show. Wow.
It's very meaty.
He actually is really good.
He's fantastic. And like, Steve, I know you're listening on the radio. Lucas, how old do you think Steve is? Just from listening to him. You know how people get a picture of someone in their head? How old do you think Steve is?
He sounds young, but grown. I would say 39.
Okay. The funny thing is like most men, I have no idea how old he is, but I also know like some sort of a ballpark. Steve is significantly, I shouldn't use that word. That's mean.
That's rude.
He's older than me and it's not terribly close. Does that surprise you?
little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What's his last name?
DeSager.
Okay.
Steve yeah. DeSager.
Gotcha.
Steve DeSager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway. Is Looney still doing that? Because I was going to say, I think DeSager's...
Oh, no, gosh.
I think DeSager's the best going right now.
And just so everybody knows, you're not talking about Kevon.
No.
Correct.
Yeah, Tom Looney.
He was the first I ever heard do a creative while giving score.
Yeah, I don't think Tom is... I don't think Tom's there anymore.
No.
I think it's been a while, actually, since Tom's been there. So, anyway.
And the other one was Feeling You.
Oh, Vic the Brick.
Thank you, Vic the Brick.
Vic the Brick Jacobs.
He might be the original update guy who was doing God. More than just 2-1, 3-2. Yeah.
Vic the Brick Jacobs, Feeling You. Yeah, and then he would do the whole thing. Vic was, I haven't talked to Vic in a long time. Vic was fighting some health stuff for a period of time. I think he's good. I think he's okay. But I also, he's not there anymore.
Yeah, either. I haven't talked to him in a long time either.
Yeah.
With the long hair and the fur coat.
Gem.
And the fur hat.
Gem of a human being.
Absolute gem.
Absolute gem of a human being. So anyway, the NFL season's here. So Ephraim and I on Sunday get to have fun. And it's a good way, like I do... this is our little secret. Don't tell any of my bosses over there at Fox Sports Radio, but especially when there's a 10 o'clock game and then the likes of Mark Grandy and his cast come in here to handle all of the post-game action after every 49er game. But especially when it's a 10 o'clock game, obviously that means what? You'll go till what? About 4 o'clock?
I'll be on the air till 1, so yeah, 4-ish probably.
You'll be about 4 o'clock. And so then there'll be an hour of, I don't know, what in God's name people are going to have to deal with. But then at 5 o'clock... Then Ephraim and I will be on, and I will, you know, skew a couple things in the Niners' direction because we're talking about all of the games, but we'll get some of the locale in there. I know where my bread is buttered, and when it's a 1 o'clock game, Grandy texts me at 7 o'clock and goes, "You're up."
Yep.
And so I immediately go, "All right, Ephraim, it's time to talk about Brock Purdy. We're gonna talk about Brock. What'd you think?" He loves Brock Purdy.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know about more than me, but he loves Brock Purdy.
Lot to love about Brock Purdy. Even in a game like that where he didn't put up huge numbers and he made two throws. One, I would credit the defense. The second pick I thought was just a bad throw, bad choice.
Yeah.
They had, you know, he was really the only guy out there in the route and Seattle had snuffed it out. But aside from that, credit Brock Purdy for a fourth quarter comeback. They entered the fourth quarter trailing. Brock Purdy gets, for just the second time ever in the regular year, he entered the fourth quarter trailing and got the win. Yes, they were 10-7. Yes, they were.
Interesting. Okay, I thought they were tied.
No, it was 10-7, and then the Niners drove down and tied it at 10 with 9:42 to go.
And then, of course, they were trailing with 3.5 or so to go when they got the ball.
3:24 to go. But they entered the fourth quarter down 10-7.
Interesting. All right. Well, there's your little stat that everyone's been waiting for. Great. All right. John Feliciano is going to join us in 5 minutes. I do want to mention this because, you know, like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Because we'll get back to we're going to be, like, hot on the Niners for the 5 o'clock hour. John Feliciano, who is teammates with all of these guys the last couple of years, is going to be on. Grandy's grades at 5:20. Speaking about meat, like this is going to be a meaty Niner sandwich now with a lot to get to. But the Phillies lead the Mets 4-0 in the fourth inning.
Okay. Yeah.
The Phillies lead the Mets 4-0 in the fourth inning. And the City Connects will be out in 2 hours over at Third and King.
With Robbie Ray. The mound. Yeah. Yes.
Against
and an
Zach
offense
Gallen.
That is suddenly... the hottest offense in baseball.
So the TikTok, they don't stop.
7.3 runs a game over the last 15. And this is after we saw two different stints this year, Mark, where they were averaging 2 a game. Remember those long runs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember
them. It was like 2 weeks where they got 2 runs a game. Oh. And now you've got like Adamas, Devers, and Chapman all launching on the regular and everybody else just getting hits all the time.
Yeah. Jung-Hoo Lee's OPS over 900. Dom Smith's damn near close to 900. This is during the streak, obviously not for the season. But, yeah, it's odd. We spent all year talking about how poor that offense was. And at the end of the year, these individual numbers, everyone's going to be like, well, they had a great year. And it's like, did they, though? Do you know what I mean? But Rafi Devers' numbers at the end of the year, Matt Chapman's OPS is higher than Machado's for the year.
Right.
Like, what do you do with that? You're like, we spent weeks where no one could even get a hit. And now you're going to get to the end of the year and the back of your baseball card's like, had a great year, 2025.
That's right.
Really?
Willy Adames might end the long reign of nobody hitting 30 home runs in a season for the Giants. So he is four homers away from being the first guy since Barry Bonds to hit 30 home runs as a Giant. This actually might happen.
It might happen. You got 18 to go.
And 18
to go. 18 to go. And the Mets trail by four. The Giants play tonight. There is a scenario where we wake up tomorrow and the number is two.
Two games back.
Two games back, plus not having the tiebreaker. Exactly. All right. Our guy is ready. We loved having him on a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, let's re-rack that sucker and do it again. Here we go. You're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station, and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app and coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.